This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, Jam, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We've got a great show for you today. We have Rob with us. We're going to do an interview with 13th Age designer Rob. And Rob, welcome to the show again.
Yeah, I think you've upgraded. I don't know. It feels more colorful and lively, or maybe we're on camera this time.
I do think this is the first time we've ever seen you as we were interviewing.
I'm pretty sure that's true. Yep. Always before, I've been able to sit quietly with dogs in my lap, and you never knew it.
Would never have known. And this will still be on audio, so no one else will know. Only we are privy to.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, this is no dog. This is a dragon.
That's right. So, Mark, why don't you start us off with our questions for Rob?
So, Rob, besides puppies, what's new with you?
In about a week, I'm going on vacation, and that means I'm doing all the things that I would actually do in that time that I will be on vacation, trying to get them done now. And I've got a new card game that I've been working on that hopefully I've done two versions of it. The first version didn't really work, and the second version seems like it's working great. And I'll kind of be possibly proving that tomorrow. So you catch me at those funny moments where the thing, yes, I'm right in the middle of actually, it seems like it's working. It's like so far all the games have been great. And I haven't really published that much lately, but bizarrely, I've been looking at proofs of games that are finished but not announced yet and asking, when is this actually going to be published? And being told, April? Maybe? And things like that, companies seem to have caught up with my method of getting things done. Now it's like, we don't know. We think it'll be then. So that's fun. So yeah, in 2022, I'll actually be having some things come out.
Awesome.
Which would be good. Yep. And I would tell you if I could, but given that they haven't flippin' announced it, I think I don't get to say anything. So yeah, there it is. And yes, and aside from that, many, many other adventures which are not germane to 13th Age. On the other hand, I have had two games that I've been running, and one of them I've really let go, I have to admit. It's been I found I cannot actually ref twice a week. And so one of the guys in my Wednesday night gaming group has been running 5e. And there's a part of my head that hurts quite a bit because, I mean, at one point Jonathan looked at me and said, this is why we wrote 13th Age, so we would never have to deal with this again. And
can you tell us what that's in relation to, or is it just sort of all of it?
The whole an adventuring day is, let's just go back to, let's cast a couple spells, blow this supposedly puissant villain out of the water, use up all our resources, and hey, man, now we're just gonna sleep it off. And so I understand that different styles of GMing can in fact move past that problem, but it was an awful lot of the world of boxed text. I keep on getting tripped up because I keep on thinking, okay, this is probably what would make sense in this world, and that's what the Game Master will be doing. But no, we're actually playing an adventure, and Jonathan, on the other hand, has channeled this. Jonathan has decided to channel the gods, even though I'm the cleric, and Jonathan will raise his hands and say, I feel like the gods are telling me that we need to go there. And I'm thumping my head on the table because it's like, oh, that's right. I was not paying attention to the fact that we're in this module. My head kills me. So anyway, so there, I'm whining. But at the same time, I've got another friend who's running a game, which very rarely happens, so I'm actually getting to play a character.
I actually want to interject really fast and just let you know that when my friend's coming out to visit, I asked her if she wanted me to run a game, and she was like, oh, please do. And while I love D&D, I really want to try 13th Age.
Oh!
And I was like, excellent! I will convert you. Do not worry.
Rob, this is the friend I told you about who did not know I had written Jackals and Becca had ran Jackals for her D&D game. And I sat down next to her to play in Becca's D&D game, and she kept going, but why can't I respond?
That's funny. That's great. So, you know, on another note, another guy in my my 13th age in D&D group and whatever it is ran Dungeons & Dragons for kids, like the kid, his kids and friends' kids and entire families. And he ended up using the escalation die, and he ended up using one die roll per fight, essentially, you know. And so it was heavily, heavily, heavily modified, but it was pretty funny because it was like, so everybody there thinks, hey, we played Dungeons & Dragons. And in a sense, they did. Yeah, wow. It was fun. So, Becca, did that already happen, or is that about to happen?
That's about to happen.
About to happen. All right.
Yeah, I will ask Becca for an after-action report, and I will forward it on to you.
Well, let me know how you managed to like let her make responses in the middle of, you know, that'll be an interesting twist right there.
Now, I know this isn't 13th Age related, but you've had two games released since the last time we've interviewed you, which feels like a deficit on our part, but Three Dragon Ante, the new version of Three Dragon Ante, has released, and WrestleNomicon has come out. Would you like to like let people know who may not be aware of either?
You know, it's been on my brain that if I was more motivated by monetary wisdom, I should probably write like a 5e adventure that heavily uses Three Dragon Ante. And like, you know, go ahead and like do something there. And so who knows, maybe I will do that. I mean, I don't know if I can do it with my brain not hurting. And so Three Dragon Ante is the card game that characters in D&D worlds play to lose or gain some of their gold. And it's you'll find it still in a couple of the places in the player's handbook as people's equipment. And it's the card game I designed when I was tired of playing Hearts with my family and wanted to go ahead and have a sort of a family game that also would work for D&D. And I think that Three Dragon Ante has turned out great and will continue to turn out great, he said, without saying anything more. So
my son is a huge fan of Three Dragon Ante. And actually, my wife, even before she got into role-playing games, really liked it, older one. And what you may not know, if you are listening and have never heard of this, there were actually rules in the back of the rule book for how to use the 5e skills, and that would be a very easy port over to 13th Age background.
I have to admit, you know, one funny thing about that when you do card games like this, I did it for 3rd edition, and I did it for 4th edition, and then I did it for 5th edition. Honestly, the 3rd edition and the 4th edition rules for integrating with the D&D kind of suck. And it wasn't because of the edition's fault or anything. It was because the way I implemented trying to like put the game together was too obtrusive. But the rules that are actually in this new set called Legendary Edition work pretty well. They're actually fun if you wanted to play a game in character with your characters. There's just enough use of what your character can do to make you feel a little bit different, a little bit special, rather than being too obtrusive, which I think the earlier mechanics were.
Yeah.
I haven't done a 13th Age port, but the truth is it's pretty simple.
Yeah, you reskin all of the individual skills as just background options.
Well, I hate to say it, but anybody who's used to running 13th Age, that's the funny part. Anybody who's a 13th Age game master could like, oh, got it, like that. You know? So, yeah, it's sort of funny.
Now, what about WrestleNomicon, another game that my son loves? We may be introducing him to games that we think are great.
Yeah. WrestleNomicon came out by Arc Dream. Mm-hmm. And when I met Dennis Deltwiller at a convention and he asked what I was doing, I mentioned that I was working on a couple card games. And he said, oh, you know, we've got all this art for a card game, but we don't have any rules. And I said, well, show me the art. He started showing me the art. And I was blown away because WrestleNomicon art by Kurt Komoda is flipping amazing. So they had all this art of Cthulhu and Haster doing professional wrestling, tearing each other apart, destroying the universe. And they had card names that were utterly hilarious, especially if you really know Cthulhu stuff. There's jokes that I didn't even get, like Casilda's thong is Haster ripping somebody completely asunder up the middle. And I didn't get that, you know, and at first. So it's I had to make a game that lived up to that. And I ended up with a card game that uses mechanics that haven't really been done ever before, of like moves that there's a track for your moves. And when you play an attack card, it doesn't automatically hit. It moves another card closer to happening. So there's this cosmic battle of giant haymakers being launched across space. And you know what's coming. So the question is, what can you do about it so that it hits with less impact, or are you devastated in response? And so I designed it as a two-player game. And at one point, when I was talking to Bebo, she was like, well, why isn't it a multiplayer game? And I explained some reason about how it hadn't worked. And she said, that's not a good reason. And I was like, oh. So actually, I've also put out multiplayer rules, and it can play really well with 3 and 4 players, which I hadn't even realized as I was designing it. So WrestleNomicon, Arc Dream is putting it out. No plans to expand it right now. Hopefully, maybe someday.
Input, Zane feels that Narlethotep and Shub would be a great expansion for the game.
Shub.
I may be raising a Cthulhu cultist. I am not entirely certain. Rob has been trying to convince me that
you guys have already gone through this. Yeah, haven't you? Yeah. I mean, you all know that what JM's doing, right? And you're cool with it. Okay, that's good. I can see by your faces that there's a mix of whatever, it's JM's family, and yes, of course, we know, and Blythe indifference.
Yeah, that's okay. That's probably.
Yeah, so in addition to your busy schedule, preparing for vacation, you know, creating a new card game, and re-entering the foray that is 5e, are you playing any 13th Age or running any 13th Age games?
I've had a game that has been going on for a while now, which my player is named Adventurer's Lament. In the first session, I know I was bragging to someone about the stunt I pulled with them, but I don't think it was you guys. It started off with the Strangle Sea, and they made promises to go back and rescue people, and then they got involved in the Crown of Axis and ended up owning the arena, partly thanks to a deal with a dread pirate, Fishstick, who is a gnome pirate. And Fishstick wanted he needed a nautical number to open the arena. And I was just politely asking them, so before you guys teleport back to the Strangle Sea, now that everything's ready to go, are you going to use the water elementals you've got to help you to fill up the arena to help Fishstick, like, you know, get the first thing going when you're back? And they were like, oh yeah, we'll do that. And what I was actually doing was being a total asshole, because if there's one thing this campaign should have taught them, is that whenever you teleport, it teleports also into you. And the Strangle Sea, a big oval part that's shaped exactly like the arena, is now in the middle of the Crown of Axis arena, teleported in as they went that away. And I just, you know, so right now they're cleaning up business on the weed mat and are preparing to go home, where people may not be entirely happy with them. They might be blamed for the fact that Fishstick was actually in league with Glark, goblin god of the Strangle Sea, anyway, etc. So yes, of course I'm running 13th Age. It's been fun. But, you know, I've been sent a slack game. You know, what's really actually happens, it's interesting, is like I have two of the players are my godsons, and I have to admit, my godsons, now that school is back up, have become more busy. And so it's really on me to like find time so that I can run it. And yeah, that game's going.
Well, yeah, one of the things I was going to ask was how is this campaign unique compared to other campaigns that you've been in? And just right away, you've thrown out two published adventures that you've woven together in a way that I never would have thought before. So
the other thing I've done sometimes is like one of the characters is a gnome, and we've established that in this world, gnomes are from Glorantha. And so that opens up all kinds of weird hero questy style things. Did I tell you guys about Badger Skunk the last time we talked? At one point, there was a birth. I haven't even written this one up, I don't think, or put it anywhere. I think it was one of the players' birthdays, and so we had his gnome character have a birthday, and all the other little gnomes threw a party, which turned out to be a game of badger, badger, skunk, also in the middle. And the idea is it's played underground, but mainly in tunnels with short people, like rugby or football or one of those war sports. And the animal that you're trying to move across the goal line is an animal you can talk to. So sometimes you're trying to get it to cooperate with you, and other times you're trying to get it to tear the throat out of the opposing ball carrier who's holding it. And randomly, like the gnome magic, throws into the badgers and skunks must not be hurt, right? That's the thing. You can't hurt the ball. It's not like troll ball. The badger, badger, skunk idea is that technically one out of six times there should be a skunk thrown up into the game that you have to use rather than a badger. But I was doing the die rolling, and out of seven balls, they got five skunks. So
are we going to see rules?
I wrote little rules for it. Yeah, little rules for whatever, you know. And the dwarf in character, actually, one of the two dwarves managed, like, as honorary small people, the dwarves are able to play. But gnomes, all the rules that apply to gnomes not hurting each other do not apply to what they can do to a dwarf who happens to be playing. And so, but he successfully got it through. And in the very next session, they played all those gnomish rapscallions at first level characters, dealing with the aftermath of the Badger Badger Skunk game that the real PCs never knew about because they'd stolen the birthday present. So, you know. Anyway, so I like to like do things on multiple levels sometimes of like where, you know, only one of the characters is really involved getting the horrible secret message from somebody who seems to be connected to the Prince of Shadows and very, very powerful. But I tell that message in front of everybody else so that they all sit there knowing how they're being betrayed. It's fun. Good for role playing.
I mean, that sounds awesome.
Yep.
Now, this may be cheating. This may be a cheating question, and I apologize to Wade if he feels like we're cheating. But apparently the 13th Age Facebook group wanted to know. They had a question. And so if you're not part of the 13th Age Facebook group but follow the Iconic podcast, the question was, do, by default, thrown magical weapons automatically return to the thrower? Because apparently in 4th edition, which is what I came from when I went into 13th Age, magical weapons automatically return to you when you throw. But in 13th Age, they had the throwing property that would then come back to you. So Wade put this question up, and I thought it would be fun to ask you. Like,
here. Well, as far as I know, the answer is no, they don't return to your hand. I mean, like we... Now, the weird part is, if players are playing letting them return to the hand, it's not a problem. I mean, it's okay. It's all right. When I talked about it with Jonathan, we both sort of realized, oops, like honestly, we didn't write anything about throwing. I don't think we wrote anything about throwing weapons magically. And like we just did melee weapons and ranged weapons, and those are chakras, and then wait, what's the thrown weapon? So we didn't handle it exactly right in the core book. And if I was to handle it right, they would have a lot bigger impact. Like, if you're going to use a thrown weapon power and actually throw this piece of your magical inventory away, and it should probably be more, do something bigger.
So maybe now, like a fire and forget kind of thing. Like, you get to throw it once in a fight.
Yeah, you get to throw it once in a fight. And maybe, and it has a recharge thing that it might recharge. I mean, I would probably also do weird. I mean, I think, look, here's my, I think the entire idea of taking a weapon that's magical and throwing it is a little bit like, that's powerful. And it's not something you should be doing at full power every fight. And maybe it's a big deal. I mean, like, now there's other characters who want to be, like, let me think about this. You know, I'd have to really look at what we did in 13th Age Glorantha, because we did the sun. Okay, the there was the monk that was the runes of the earth and the sun.
Yeah, and who could throw their shield.
Well, and that because the person who was the person who sponsored that, the patron, wanted essentially to play Captain America and Glorantha. So that's an interesting question. You know, it's like, oh, okay, how's this going to work? Well, okay, a monk, all right. And they're definitely throwing their shield, and I think it's coming back to them. But I can't even remember right now. So I suspect that we've looked at this in other ways, but never systematically. And I think that probably there's some design space there to do something interesting with spears and axes and weapons that are meant to be thrown. And maybe, you know, like the ticky tacky thing of like, I pry it out of their dead body, you know, or stuff like that is not exactly what I want to be doing running 13th Age. You know, I don't really want to be doing that. So it's probably much more like, you know, when you throw it, it's not going to be picked up and used against you, but it isn't really something you're getting access to.
See, I would have it returned to you with, you know, by a red cap. So it comes back to you, but not the way you want it.
Like in that fight. I like that mark. Every single time somebody throws a weapon, everybody else is going, no! No! Actually, wait a minute. Let me think about that. So are you saying that in your game, red caps are the official returners of magic items? Like it's sort of like a business?
They could be.
They pop up every time?
It's, you know.
I sort of love the idea that there's some face. Hold on a minute. Yeah, so one version of this would be that the icon you're involved with has some sort of spirit accomplice. And it works really easily for the Elf Queen. And maybe a little bit for the dwarves somehow, with the idea being that, yeah, your weapon will come back to you, but you've got to be minding your P's and Q's and, you know, and sometimes it goes badly wrong. Yeah, you know, the whole 1 out of 6 badger skunk thing sounds pretty good to me. Is this a badger return or a skunk return?
Badger red cap?
Badger red cap. Random red cat. What does my throne spear mean to the rest of the group? Random red caps. Oh no, you said red cap.
That's the bad word. In the last episode we recorded, I talked about my continuing love of the red cap design in 13th Age. Becca.
Well, and if the red caps are returning weapons and that creates the trigger word is the type of weapon it is. It's like, oh, look, he brought me back my dagger. And then it attacks, you know.
I mean, this is so silly. We'd never do this to player characters. Oh, yeah. Yes. Find a way. Somehow. I mean, you know, if I'm already, like, doing with, especially if you're, like, hero quest. Yeah. So do your players ever throw their weapons twice, Mark?
No.
No. That's right. I love it.
They only make the mistake once.
A commentary on 4th edition. It returns to you. Oh, you want your weapon to return? Oh, dear. That's way too much on the nose for my GMing style, guys. I was getting mocked so heavily. I mean, I'm the one who... Apparently, no, it's true. One time, for the first time ever, I decided to use that random little chart about like how much treasure do you get per level. And so, for some reason, I made Jonathan roll. He rolled badly on it, and he was like searching some like snake cultist people. So I had like a poisonous snake that was hidden in the robes of the person he was searching bite him on the way to, you know, so supposedly I'm giving him treasure, and actually, I damage him, I give him a couple gold pieces and a healing potion. So yeah, I've never been able to live that one down. Like with the word treasure in my group, you know, is like...
Triggers PTSD.
Well, they're pretty sure that like that's why I don't like 5th edition, because they're actually giving treasure. Anyway.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with the second part of this interview with Rob. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.